G'day folks, and welcome to our next episode of Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Firstly, we'd like to say thank you for all of the positive feedback we received about our first podcast addressing the basics on the concept of FRMS. A surprising amount of work goes into producing these chats, so to hear that our members found the first chat useful is very heartening. Work is underway on a follow-up episode on some more detailed practical examples of FRMS in your day-to-day working lives. However, today's chat focuses on another topical thread, how to best prepare for an upcoming training slot. More than 250 crew have been allocated a training slot in the 2022-23 training year. And whilst the upcoming training may be course number 5 or 6 in some of your careers, we understand that for many, a training slot remains a mixture of excitement and apprehension. To help provide some tools, tips and tricks to best prepare and manage your uptraining training course, I am joined today by 4 experienced trainers to chat about the issue. Firstly, Captain Tony Lucas. Tony is a CAT on the A330 and is also the president of APA. Welcome, Tony.
G'day, Mark. G'day, everyone.
We also have Captain Alex Winslow. Alex is a CAT on the Boeing 737 and is also a member of the APA executive in his role of Assistant Secretary. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks, Mark.
Captain Andrew Simpson has been a TRE on both the Boeing 737 and now the 787 and has kindly joined us today. Welcome, Simo.
G'day, Mark, and thank you.
And lastly, Captain Sean Golding. Sean is a current TRE on the Boeing 787 and has also worked as a TRE on the 767, as well as working as a training manager on the Boeing 767. Welcome, Sean.
G'day, how are you going?
So, to Tony first, on the QF Flight Crew website, if you click on the training tab and then in the information tab, you can access information about training start dates as well as training paths for transitional training. Can you explain to our listeners why there are various paths and what the differences may be?
Yeah, look, the Qantas Flight Crew website, Mark's got a whole bunch of information there. If you go under training and then you need to click on the commencement dates for training vacancies, and then underneath that, there's a few different options that you can go to. There's one that will tell you your actual commencement date of your start in the next bid period or the next roster. Then there's some click on your training paths that you might take, and each pilot will have a dedicated training path. And there's also a link there for your training books as well, which will be issued to you when you start your course, but that's the things that need to be signed off as you go. In terms of your training paths, you could be on a conversion path or you might be on a promotional path. In terms of the promotional path, then there's two of those. There's either your command training pathway or there's a promotional training pathway, which is from second officer to first officer. And those paths depend really very much on where you are coming from or your previous type or whether you're previously rated on that aircraft type.
Now, am I correct in thinking, Tony, that flight training have the option to vary the training path? For example, you may be paired with someone who may need a full endorsement on the jet when you don't, but it just is more efficient to put the two trainees together?
Yeah, ultimately, Mark, it's ideal if we are all on training paths that align with someone of previous experience. So if I'm going to the A330, it's best if I'm paired with someone, and coming from the 737, it's best if I'm paired with someone who is also coming from the 737 because our training pathway will be virtually identical. Due to the vagaries of our seniority system and when people can be released, frequently that doesn't happen. And so I might be coming from, say, the A380 to the A330, which is a fairly simple conversion course, but my crash buddy or my partner is a 737 pilot. And so rather than me doing the CCQ course or the quick qualification course, I'm now going to be doing the slightly longer course.
Now, Alex, depending on where you're based and where the training is planned, the company has a number of different options regarding the provision of accommodation and allowances. Can you give us a brief description of the different options and where this information can be found if our listeners want more information to explore it?
Thanks, Mark. Information about choosing whether you'd like the company to make all arrangements about your flights, transport and accommodation during your training course is contained within our short-haul EA in Clause 50. Basically, there are three options. if you are training outside your base and or reside more than 200 kilometres from the training facility. If you reside within 200 kilometres of the training facility, whether or not you are based in that city, you won't have the option or entitlement for accommodation, transport and allowances. So the three options are: option one, the company will supply the pilot with accommodation, transport and DTA for the time you are at the location of training. This includes flights if needed to transport you from your base if you're training out of base. With option two, the company will pay you an allowance in lieu of the supply of transport and accommodation. Option two is further broken down into two parts, option 2A and option 2B. It is important to note that if you wish to choose option 2A or B, this must be done by the election date. Otherwise, option one will be assumed to be your choice. The election date is 28 days before the start of your training course, or if you receive less than 28 days notice of your training course, it's within 7 days of when you've been notified of your training. Option 2A includes allowances for accommodation, 5 nights in 7, DTA for 5 days in 7, and flights to and from your base to your training location. Option 2B gives you an allowance for accommodation from the very start of your training course until completion. It gives you 7 days DTA, but you're entirely responsible for your own flights.
Thanks, Alex. And just as well, from a long-haul perspective, Appendix E, page 266 of EA10, is where you'll find the information regarding the long-haul allowances information.
So we've now determined the likely training path and worked out whether you're eligible for accommodation and allowances. Now, can I ask Sean and Simo for your thoughts on how to best prepare for commencing the training slot? And I'll start with you, Andrew.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate that. I suppose it's the same way as that we've always been looking towards, let's say, doing our normal cyclics, but obviously this is really, you approach it very much like a marathon. So with that marathon, you break it up into small pieces. So obviously you're looking at the solid core knowledges such as limitations, recall, memory items, how to do the ECL, electronic management, and the operation of that, and also the protocols. Always try and look for a couple of sims and manage a few sims ahead. So if you can do that, that's great. Whether you wind up doing all of the sims in your preparation, well, that's good. But don't forget, don't get too far advanced. Otherwise, you can wind up getting pretty well overwhelmed by the whole thing. Break it up, get it into small components.
And your thoughts, Sean?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's a number of things that you can do prior to commencing training. Firstly, just ensure that you've got your own personal fitness level up, because when you're in the training program, you may not have the opportunity to maintain that level of fitness. So if you can get that done beforehand, regular exercise throughout the training program helps. Your diet, your health, extremely important before you start, because that gets your mind and body ready before you start the program itself. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is to have a chat to your family and friends. Just tell them what you can expect, or they can expect rather, in the training program, and that you're going to be out of the loop for a fair amount of the time. Don't start any major building projects or anything of the like, because that's going to be a major distraction. So try as best you can to get everything at home in order before you start the program. The other thing you can do is to go through a lot of the operational notes, such as in the FAM, the operational chapters in the FAM. Even if you're not on type, you can certainly read through your policy, EDTO, etc., to make sure that you're on top of those chapters before you start. The bottom line is, the more you do beforehand, the easier it will be during the program itself.
Okay. Now, having worked in the role of training manager, Sean, can you give us some examples of where maybe someone didn't quite prepare as they should have, and what steps were taken to help them?
Yeah, so there are options. Sometimes we've had trainees with that issue that didn't quite prepare as they should. So we'll have a look and sit down with you and try and identify where those deficiencies are. And that may involve things such as extra sims, or even some one-on-one in a classroom with an instructor at some point. So remember, the aim of the game with training section is we want to pass people. We want to try and get them through the system. it's not up to us to pass. It's a collaborative approach. It's the trainee has to put a significant amount of work in, and we will help facilitate that training program. So there are things that we can do. Ideally, as I said, try and get as much done beforehand. So to answer that question more fully, if you go and have a chat to the DMTC before you start the training program, even if it's last minute, you can at least get better advice before you start. That's the aim of the game.
Yeah. So basically, it's fair to say the DMTC's door is open. Even if you're a junior second officer becoming an FO, don't be afraid to go and talk to those people.
Always go and ask. They will welcome you. They will sit down. They will talk to you and help give you some advice on preparation. The other thing that you can do to help is also identify somebody who could mentor you. I remember going through my training, I had a TRE at the time, and I could sit there and pick up the phone any time and have a chat with them also. That was also a fairly non-threatening way that you could ensure that you could get some good advice.
Okay, great. Now, Simo and Sean, trainees come to you following ground school and ground sims. What advice can you give our listeners in terms of being prepared to succeed at this point?
Okay, that's a great question, Hoff. Look, at the flight sim phase, there's an expectation that we would have of our trainees that they would be pretty well grounded in their SOPs and all of the basic knowledge, and we're just going to enhance the flying skills and the procedures as we move forward. So to prepare for that phase is put the effort in to get those simulator sessions prepared early. I know when I went through my training, I basically had a manila folder, and I had each particular simulator lesson plan, all of the notes that I needed for it, all done prior. So the more you can do before the sim, the easier it's going to be as you move through the sim program. Good preparation is the key to success.
One thing as well, of course, is that every opportunity is a learning opportunity. So if the sim itself doesn't go exactly as you plan, that is still a positive learning outcome for you. Also, remember that this is about adult learning, and that adult learning in particular is a partnership between both the student and the instructor. And be fully aware and supportive as well, knowing that the instructor is there to support you and achieve a positive and successful outcome.
And I think that's very good advice. Now, are there any, and this can be for both Alex and Simo, are there any common mistakes that trainees make that you can share with our listeners so that they can learn from others? Alex, have you got anything there?
One thing that does pop up reasonably frequently, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's a mistake, is that when trainees come from either from short haul to long haul or from Airbus to Boeing or vice versa, there's different cultural things that happen in each fleet. The briefings can be very slightly different. The environment within which you brief, for example, on the 737, often you've got quite a tight time frame to do the briefing. So just having that briefing format, making sure you're ticking off all the required items, but keeping it interactive and to the point, practicing that sort of stuff would definitely be helpful for coming out to line training, especially.
Okay. And Simo, are there any sort of common mistakes or things that you could share with our listeners so they can learn from it?
Oh, I'd have to absolutely agree with that. It's finding that Goldilocks balance, if you like. Not too long and not too short, but just right in terms of briefing.
Yep.
And so that is absolutely gold advice, particularly with that. I'd also say make sure that you've drawn from the IPTs in terms of sequencing of non-normal memory items, and that you stick to the SOPs, and also treat the sim as you would online as well. So put that in context, each and every sim in context, so that you do actually do what you do in the sim, what you will ultimately do in line.
And your thoughts, Sean?
Yeah, there's a few, actually. It goes back to the earlier question you asked about preparation. Like, if you've got an issue at home, if you've got some life stresses, even though that you might make the best plans to have everything in order, as we all know, life doesn't necessarily follow up the script that we want it to. Put your hand up. Put your hand up early if there are things going wrong at home or there's stresses that are occurring that you're finding difficult to cope with. It's far easier for us to manage that before something goes wrong. When I was the training manager on the 767, we had a number of trainees that fell over with multiple option Bs, only to subsequently find out that they might have had some marital problems or there were issues with their kids. told us earlier, we could have dealt with that and helped them and put a program in place to manage their training program. The other thing is, don't try and remember everything. You know, as I said to you earlier, you've got to know the operational chapters in the FAM. You've got to know the operational SOPs for the aircraft. But some trainees try and remember absolutely everything, and their brains start to get a little bit too cluttered. You've got to have a good working knowledge of where to find information. You need to find the chapter, but you don't necessarily need to know the verse.
Yep.
Look it up. That's the main thing.
Excellent. Now, this is to Simo and Sean, the dreaded command management sims. Now, more than 50 crew are going to be undertaking initial command training over the next 12 months. And look, from full disclosure, I'm lucky enough to be one of them, so I guess I'm asking this question for me as much as all our other listeners. What advice can you give the trainees to help them successfully navigate those command management sims?
Yeah, it's Simo here. So I really think that one of the big components there with command is that you're more often not used to the SOPs, familiar with the SOPs, and you're more often not on the same aircraft, and also very familiar with the network as well. So the big change is not only the seat change, but an attitude as well. So you're coming into, yes, you're doing your command, but the big component is, yes, it's your command, but it's now about being responsible. So you're now developing your responsibility and your command style during these command exercises. So I'd say for me, that's the big takeaway, is now understanding that you are now responsible and then striking that balance in responsibility.
Okay. Sean?
The command sims are a really good opportunity to pressure test your command management structure, your style. What we don't want is people necessarily learning what's in a lesson plan. What we want you to focus on is having a good foundational framework with which you can manage the operation of the aeroplane. You can learn a little bit about that with the Command HF course. It's a three-day course that is being run. I think most, if not all, command trainees will go through that at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that I certainly did when I went through my command training was that I read every single checklist on that aeroplane because I wanted to know what the implications were for some of the more serious ones, and I'd give that some thought. I'd also go through each MEL. Most of the time, they're fairly benign, but there are a few curly ones in there, and the last thing you need is to get a very complex MEL, for example, in the middle of a simulator that you've never seen before. So, again, it comes back to that preparation. So the more you do beforehand, the better prepared you are, the more equipped you'll be to pass those sims.
Now, we've all had a bad day, and it can sometimes occur in the sim session. So for Simo and Sean, if a trainee experiences an option B, can you explain the process following the option B and any advice on how to best handle getting back on the horse for the next sim session?
Yeah, good point. We've all experienced that. We've all experienced things that we not necessarily have been happy with. But that, yet again, is to try and turn it around into a positive and say, well, that is part of the learning experience. So an option B has come through, and you'll just be clear on the reasons why the option B has given, and so that there'll be areas in which you can then concentrate on. Once the option B is then given, it's actually a continuation to get more sim time and actually to get more training. So it goes to the head of training, let's say for the 787, and devising and then creating a training path to further develop those skills.
Yeah, so the intent is to fix the issue rather than to, it's not a stopping point, it's just a moment to pause and basically reset and go forward.
Absolutely, in that we've all needs area in which we need to continue to develop, and that's a perfect opportunity in which to continue with those. I mean, it wouldn't be anything, it's a bit disconcerting for all of us if we continue to go on with areas that we don't feel as comfortable with, and that's the opportunity in which to develop those and become comfortable.
Yeah, look, at option B, the option B really just says to the trainee that they have not achieved proficiency in a particular sequence or sequences. So it means that you've got more training to do to get to that level of proficiency. And a single option B is really no big deal, because what will happen is The option B will be flagged, and typically in consultation with the DMTC and the instructor that gave the option B, I've come up with a training plan, and that's normally annotated by a 999, a SIM exercise 999.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just simply additional training to get you up to speed. Because what you've got to remember is that not everybody learns at the same rate. Not everybody brings to the table the same level of experience. So we can expect a few option Bs through, you know, at times through the training program. And we will just simply put into place another additional SIM, get you back up to speed. And most of the time, that's the end of it. We continue on with our training plan.
Okay. Now, if a trainee feels like they're starting to struggle, so what options do they have? And by being struggle, I mean it could be a combination of issues, including something's happening at home, or maybe the rate of training is something that they're not coping with. So to Sean and Andrew, what can a trainee do, or who can they turn to for help and guidance?
So again, if you can get a hold of a mentor to help you, also the DMTC. So the DMTC will be able to manage the situation by potentially modifying your training path a little, sequencing SIMs at times that might be more appropriate. I don't mean time of day, I just mean that you might be able to delay SIMs. But certainly just put your hand up, go into the DMTC, talk to your mentor, and they'll be able to put something in place to help you through.
Okay.
Yeah, for help and guidance, I always think that your peers are a great support.
Mm-hmm.
Also, your crash buddy as well, in terms of discussing components with that. Don't forget the instructors there also are a great resource in which to discuss not only that current instructor, but other instructors, not only on that fleet, but other fleets that you feel comfortable with. In addition to that, you can simply go to as well to the head of training, let's say Kester, who's on the 787, who's extremely open and there to support and to do what is required and needed that's best for the student.
Excellent. And as a follow-up, Tony, from a welfare perspective from APA, if a member feels they are struggling to handle the training course, how can APA help?
Yeah, APA's got a couple of things that we can do to assist, Mark. It's important to acknowledge that life doesn't stop during a training course. The training itself can be a challenge, but life doesn't stop. And so there can be stuff happening in the background that impacts your ability to respond to those other life challenges that are going on. So I think it's important, you know, as Simo and Sean said, to reach out if there's an issue, to reach out and ask for assistance. APA Welfare can help. Jeff Hayes, a former training manager, and has a lot of experience in that space. He can help people navigate through the issues that you're facing in the training pathway. And Shane Kennedy is a former Qantas Flight Operations Human Resources manager, and she's also very good at providing you support as you step through the various processes. Also available, APA recently started up a training mentors program, and they can be contacted via APA Welfare as well. They're highly experienced Qantas pilots, some of whom left during the voluntary redundancy and COVID early retirement program and have made themselves available as well. And so they're a very experienced crew that if you reach out to the APA Welfare team, they can assist if you wanted to talk to someone who's now quite removed from the training system and can help you work through whatever issues it is you're dealing with.
So I think the message there is if you are having some troubles, don't be a stranger. Pick up the phone or send APA an email and we're there to help.
Absolutely.
Now, so when a trainee finally experiences some vitamin D as they reach line training, that presents a raft of whole new challenges. Now, on the 737, Alex, almost all of the training is promotional training. So what advice can you give to those coming to the 737 to best prepare for their line promotional training?
One of the first things I'd suggest is to get in touch with your training captain if they haven't already got in touch with you. This can help put you at ease a little more, as you can ask any questions that you might have, and the trainer can explain how the line training will be structured. It also enables you to establish a rapport and get to know your trainer. Secondly, I'd suggest keep going. Acknowledge that you have got through the SIM phase. Take a moment or a day, breathe, acknowledge your accomplishment, but then keep going. Keep
going with the preparation and the homework so that you're planning ahead for each flight and can perform to your best. Thirdly, your trainer's there to help, so don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't fully understand something, even if it's something that you think you should understand, now is the perfect time to ask. And lastly, the dreaded discussion items. There's a lot of reading there. There's a lot of pages to go through. It's best to get started on that reading or taking notes before you start your course. Leaving it until you finish the simulators will just increase your workload for your line training sectors. And in fact, a lot of that information contained in the discussion items will greatly assist you in your simulators. The other point to make is that they are discussion items. It's okay to ask questions. It's the perfect time to ask questions. They're not quiz items, but equally, they're not lecture items. So have a read, take your notes so that you're able to contribute to the discussion. It's a great opportunity for learning and it'll help you a lot with your line training.
Excellent. And is there any particular knowledge area? I mean, you've answered this, but I guess, is there any particular knowledge area that you think trainees should try to make sure they've got squared away before commencing the line sectors? It sounds like the discussion items is part of that, or is there anything else you could add?
Definitely the discussion items are part of that. Probably you would want to focus also on things that you're not going to have time to look up as you're flying. So if you're coming down an approach and maybe the speed's a little bit excessive and you're thinking, oh, stable approach criteria, what was that figure again? The stuff you don't have time to look up when you need it, stable approach criteria, crosswind limits for the 737, maybe the visual approach criteria, that sort of stuff will, if you've got that squared away, make your line training a lot easier.
Okay. Now, Tony, on the 330, there is a mix of both domestic and international flying. So any thoughts on how best to prepare for this mix of flying during the trainees' line training?
Ultimately, that one depends a little bit on where the trainee's coming from. For someone who's got previous 737 experience and they're coming to the A330, then they'll deal with the domestic side of it fairly well. They might not be quite used to the different pace internationally, and certainly dealing with aircraft that might be more frequently operating up around max takeoff weights and into foreign ports. There's certainly different experiences between the two. So for domestically, everything just tends to come together with a few minutes to go. And if it's not, or things aren't happening at a certain time frame, then you need to tend to jump in and deal with that. Whereas internationally, there's a little bit more fat in the schedule. People tend to keep you informed if things aren't working correctly, and you tend to be spoon-fed a little bit more. In terms of preparing for it, certainly your trainers will help step you through those aspects of the job. But it's just adapting to a slightly different pace between the two environments.
Very good. Now, we discussed before with Sean and Andrew the process for an option B in the sim. Now, if a trainee has a bad day as a line sector, and this is for Tony and Alex, what is the process following that sector and what advice do you have for the trainee to rebound successfully? Alex, can you start?
Yep. It would be a very similar process to what occurs with simulator training. The training will be paused there at the completion of that sector. Training captain will advise the training department that the training's paused or potentially an option B. There may be an opportunity for a short debrief at that point, but most likely on the same day, someone from the training department will be in touch to discuss the next steps for your training. That could be jumping back into the sim for a bit more practice in a certain area of your flying or procedures, or it may well be that there's no value from going back into the simulator and you'll just continue with your line training after a bit of a more thorough debrief.
Okay.
But in all cases, you will be supported and we're looking to get you back out on the line.
Okay. And Tony, your thoughts?
I think there's a few aspects to that part of the question, Mark. We all have bad days out, and the question is, how do we respond to it when it happens? We're all high-performing and we all want to do well. I think, firstly, we need to see the bad day out as an opportunity to grow and learn and to review what it is that we need to improve upon. So the first part of it is having a mental attitude that says we can learn and grow and improve. Obviously, if we've had a bad day out, there'll be a debrief with the trainer as to the areas that are a problem. Then it goes to the deputy manager training and checking for the aircraft type, and they might put in a revised training program that could involve additional sectors. It might involve additional sims. The big thing to remember is that these setbacks, or what appear to be setbacks in our own minds, aren't as big a deal to those of us in the training system as perhaps they are to the individual that's going through the issue at that point in time. We, as trainers, see this as part of a journey, and everyone's journey looks different. And so when we have a bad day out, that's part of your journey, and that's what makes you you, and that's what gets you eventually to the standard that you need to be at as we move forward.
Now, when it comes to the final check, we all will approach this moment differently. Can you, each of you, and this includes Simo, and we'll start with Simo, can each of you provide your own perspective on how to best handle the final check?
Well, I believe the best way to handle the final check is to simply treat it like any other day. And in addition to that, just treat it as though that that this is not only another day, but I won't. I will present what I normally do every day that I've been doing my line training, and also during my sim exercises as well, so that the person flying with you and observing and supporting you is looking at how you would normally operate. And don't, in addition to that, don't try and pretend to be somebody you're not. So be true to yourself in terms of your own behaviour, and don't try and second guess what you think the instructor or examiner is looking for. So what you're flying is exactly the way you would on the day and any other day, and that's what they're observing. And you're not trying to pander or trying to operate to the way you think other people should be operating.
Okay. Alex, have you got anything to add?
I'd agree with everything Simo said there. I would say think about the behaviours and the operation that has got you to that point. If you're up for your check, it's because the training department believes that you will pass the check.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've been doing to date should serve you well in the check. And yes, absolutely. You're in that role, believe in yourself, and just perform that role as you think it should be performed.
I think if you're heading towards the check, I think the big thing is to not do anything differently to what you have been doing. It's a matter of approaching it as just another flight. Certainly, all the trainers want you to succeed. They want you to do well. We understand that people are nervous. We understand that people will make mistakes. You need to be able to let yourself make small mistakes and capture them and stay in the game and not worry too much about what the person sitting beside you is thinking. If you do the job to the best of your ability and you've been doing well so far, then you'll probably pass your training without too many dramas. So the big thing is to probably, I guess, stay out of your head a little bit and don't second guess yourself, that if you've been put up towards your check, then everyone has the expectation that you'll be fine.
Very good. Now, if you pass your final check, apart from having a well-earned beer, Simo, can you explain what steps need to be taken to have your status raised to your new aircraft type?
Okay, Mark. Well, make sure that their training book is completely filled out and that all the signatures are in there that are required, ensuring that all the line sectors have all been filled out and that they're all up to date, including all the comments. In addition to that, make sure that all your CMSs have been up to date as well, including your final check as well from your check captain, but that's all in, reviewed and signed off. So then, given the CMSs have all been signed off and that your training book is all up to date, then you need to organise an interview with the training department on that time. So you can do it remotely in terms of the interview, and you'll also then need to scan your documents or the training book or even send it to the training department via internal mail. Once that's done and your final interview has been done, then a CMF is raised with that or after that meeting, and you then need to sign that CMS off. Once that's been signed off, various documents will be raised, the norms will be updated, and from there, the training department should in fact wind up giving you consolidation flying, and you're underway.
Awesome. Now, lastly, is there anything each of you would like to add in closing about the process of undertaking a training slot? Alex.
Throughout your training, reflect on your own performance. Take ownership of any areas that need improvement. If you own your errors and strive to improve, then the trainers are in a much better position to help you and develop your skills to achieve the best possible outcome.
Okay. And Sime, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Alex on those points. Remember, it is onerous. We said before that it is a marathon, so break it down into small pieces so it doesn't seem too onerous. Make sure that you really basically try and enjoy the process as well, and that there are new things to learn and new things to practice, and that's all part and parcel of it. So I know it seems a bit broad-based, but don't forget to enjoy it.
Very good. And Tony?
For me, I often say to trainees, there are four rules for training. The first one is to have fun. This is a fun job that we do, and it's important to enjoy it when we do it. Sometimes that's difficult because it's new and it's challenging. So on the days when it's not fun, find the joy in the day. Even if you happen to look out the window and go, you know, this is a pretty cool job. Thirdly, embrace the suck. There are days in training where it can feel pretty dark and hard work. Well, embrace that. If it's a 2 a.m. sim session, embrace the 2 a.m. sim session and go, Yahoo, this is awesome. At least I'm doing a promotional course and I'm not going to let multiple back-of-the-clock sim sessions take me down now. I'm going to be better than that. Mm-hmm. And the final bit of advice I give to people is never, ever, under any circumstances, give up. You're always in the game. If you make a mistake, get back on the horse, keep fighting, and stick with it.
And lastly, Sean.
Yeah, look, remember, it's training. So we don't expect you to be a captain or a first officer on day one of training. So don't stress that. The training program is designed to get you to that level of proficiency at the end, not at the beginning. So, as I said, work through, do as much preparation as you can, but don't have the expectation that you need to be in command standard from day one or FO standard from day one. That's what training section is there to help you get through to achieve at the end, not the beginning.
Well, thank you to Captains Tony Lucas, Alex Winslow, Andrew Simpson and Sean Golding for their wisdom and insight on what should be an exciting and challenging time in any pilot's career. We appreciate your time today. Remember, you can get in touch with the podcast via email, office@apa.org.au, and include the word podcast in the subject line. Your feedback and ideas for future shows is always welcomed. That's all we have time for today. So to all of those out there with a training slot, congratulations, work hard, and remember, when all things get a bit rough or tough, remember the advice offered today, and if all else fails, stick with it.